Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
.03 here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet590.ca, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I am Rob Wong here with John Gregg and Ryan Dixon. A packed show for you here on this Saturday morning. Lots to get to. We will chat about the upcoming NHL draft, which of course goes in a week's time. The first round anyways available. It'll be on Sportsnet. We will talk about what Maple Leafs will do, maybe what they need to do as a team heading into the off season. We'll also chat about the NBA Finals Game 7 tomorrow night in Golden State. Should be a classic. Can't believe the Cavaliers have even gotten to this point. But we kick things off the show, gentlemen, with the Red Hot Blue Jays. How can we not talk about the Toronto Baseball Club as they are just on fuego right now? The offense has finally picked up back to where people thought it was going to be. John, 81 runs in their last 10 games. How can you not feel good about this team right now?
Michael Saunders is the best baseball player in the world, right? Right?
Oh, man.
RBI. I think in the last week, they've averaged 7 runs a game, and that includes a shutout. You know, when you score like 13 runs, 2 out of 3 games or whatever it's been. Yeah, they're getting back to where everybody thought they would be. Now, granted, you know, it's not like they've been playing the toughest of competition recently. They did go through a really tough stretch earlier in the season when they weren't scoring runs and maybe guys weren't hitting like they should be. But, you know, recently they've had some, you know, patsies to a certain extent. And for me, I think what we've seen is the bottom of the order really picking things up. There was a lot of guys who were kind of streaking, whether they were good or bad, but nobody was doing it as a collective. And right now we're seeing the bottom of the order getting on base for the top of the order, and that's making a huge difference. And that's what was happening most of the end of last season, where it was, whether it was Goins or Pilar, whoever was down there, and this year it might be Darwin Barney, they were getting on base, and that was putting a lot of pressure on the pitchers when they had to face those guys at the top of the lineup.
And Ryan, obviously it's never as good as, you know, when you're playing at your best. It's never as bad as when you're awful. But I guess we've gotten to a point now where I think Blue Jays fans feel that, hey, you know what? Early on in the season, that was probably not the team that we're seeing, and we're finally getting back to this point. But do you have confidence that this team can continue doing what they're doing, or do you feel there's some areas that still need to be filled?
Let's turn our mics on, guys. I think there's no doubt that it's a fallible club, but yeah, I certainly think the version you're seeing now is much closer to the version that people thought they were going to see. I mean, the offensive talent is there, and we know they're going to squeeze pitchers and score their runs. I just think the real question for the Blue Jays is going to be what happens, because, you know, obviously you can't put it on the board, but over the course of 162, I just feel like they have too much talent to not eventually pull away and win that division just because there isn't another real heavyweight in there. I mean, we know that the two teams closest to the Jays, Baltimore and Boston, both have really serious pitching problems, and you know that's where the Blue Jays' troubles lie, but I think to a far less degree. So it's not so much a question of can this team get it together enough to over the long haul win that division. It's when you get down to those tense playoff moments, do they have enough in the pen, and are the frontline starters really good enough to win in the postseason? That's where I think the questions are going to come from.
And that really seems like where it's going to come down to, the pitching, because you look at the offenses that the Red Sox have, arguably the best in all of Major League Baseball, the Orioles, they have shown what they can do. Obviously, they can put up the home runs. They can put up crooked numbers on the scoreboard. But the pitching, man, we saw last night, Baltimore, Mike Wright got sent down after the game. Ubaldo Jimenez is in the bullpen now. Yovani Gallardo pitches today. The Red Sox just put Clay Buchholz back in the starting rotation, which is not a good thing for them. So, I mean, there's definite holes as far as the pitching goes for those teams. And when you look at the Blue Jays, not that there's not holes. I mean, the bullpen is obviously still an issue. We'll talk about Aaron Sanchez in a second, as it looks like he's headed the bullpen at some point this season. But, I mean, just as a whole, I mean, you have to feel really good about the way that the Blue Jays have their team structured right now, despite the fact Jose Bautista's on the DL, Troy Tulowitzki's still hurt, and maybe some of the guys like Devin Travis really haven't hit their stride just yet. But like I mentioned, Aaron Sanchez, by all accounts, looks like he's going to head to the bullpen at some point. John Gibbons has kind of mentioned that. We don't know when. There's no innings cap, no innings limit. GM Ross Yatkins has talked about they'll look at, you know, spin rates and just kind of see how he's feeling on a day-to-day basis. And Sanchez threw 133 innings 2 years ago, including in the minors and Major League Baseball. And if we go by that 20% rule, I mean, we can have a discussion about that. There's a lot of people that think it's kind of, you know, not a real thing, and it really has to go on a case-by-case basis. But if we go by that, we have Sanchez at around maybe 160 based on a couple of years ago. So that would give him about 10 more starts and take him some point into about August or so, John. But I mean, I guess the problem is we don't know if they're going to stop him as a starter at 160 in that neighborhood and then send him to the pen, or if there's a cap earlier before that and they send him to the bullpen before he reaches that. Because ultimately, when he heads to the pen, he's still going to pitch. Like, he's not being shut down for the entire season. Like, Aaron Sanchez is going to head to the bullpen and be a key cog. So I don't know if we can get into a discussion necessarily if we think it's the right move. I think we all agree that we would prefer to have Aaron Sanchez in there. But when do you think would be the right time to do it?
I would say sooner than later. I mean, I don't mean tomorrow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want him if they are going to use an innings count like 160, as you say, Rob. I mean, I wouldn't want him to get anywhere near it, because I want him to throw another 30 innings out of the bullpen and go on a long playoff run.
Yeah.
For me, if they're looking at innings, and I think innings is just such a weird way to look at it. I mean, you could have a 35-pitch inning or a 5-pitch inning, and, you know, I think the Jays brass seems smart enough to understand that, obviously, and they will be looking at pitch counts and spin rates and all, as you said. But, I mean, I want to make sure that Aaron Sanchez sees as much high-leverage action as possible. I don't want anybody thinking, oh, he's creeping up on his innings count, and, you know, we need to save him for October baseball.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make the move, I would do it sometime in mid-July, I think, because you got to find out if you need another starter. You know, you're going to call up Hutchison and see what he's got. You got to give him two or three or four times through, right, and see if he can handle it. Because otherwise, in my mind, I mean, you're putting your number two starter in the bullpen, and unless Marcus Stroman brings or comes around and everybody else kind of performs, you know, R.A. Dickey has a second half like he did last year.
And he kind of always does.
He kind of always does. But, I mean, he's also 40, whatever he is now. So who knows? And, you know, I just worry that you're not going to – they're on a nice run right now offensively. But I don't think they're going to average 5.5 runs for the season like they did last year. And I don't think you want to be in a position where, you know, pretty much 4 out of every 5 starts – maybe 3 out of every 5 starts, you got to score 5 runs to win. And that's the way it's shaping up right now with Stroman and Dickey. And I assume Hutchison is going to be in that boat as well.
Well, I guess, what do they do, Ryan? Do they have to make a trade? I mean, Drew Hutchison, another guy down in the minors right now, Wade LeBlanc, who's having a great year in Buffalo, not exactly names that inspire a lot of confidence. I mean, do you have faith that a Drew Hutchison or another guy that maybe is not a number two starter, but a guy that can give you innings? We've seen Hutchison at times in the major leagues pitch pretty well, not so much last year, but, you know, what do you think is the best solution?
Yeah, I think you give Hutchison a crack, and I think we know they will, because this management team is pretty on record about not really wanting to reach into the prospect pool any further, because obviously, you know, it was depleted quite severely last year. And, you know, when you're talking about going and getting help and you're talking about moving Sanchez out of a starting role into the bullpen, I mean, you quickly get into the big philosophical question around the Blue Jays, which is, do they kind of owe it to themselves and to the fans to do everything they can to live in the now, right? Because it does really seem like there's a window open, and obviously you're always trying to have an eye on the now and an eye on the future, but it sure feels like this is a team that, if it gets into the playoffs, could be the one that has its number pulled. And you know, we know basically the theory around baseball is to some degree the playoffs are all luck. So it's just about getting there as many times as you can. But of course, it still is going to be largely based on, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, having all your bases covered when you get there, giving yourself the best chance possible. And just when I look at this team now, there is just a big voice in my head that says, in for a penny, in for a pound. And if you think there is a number 3-4 guy out there who you can get for a fairly decent return, who you are sure is going to be better than Drew Hutchison, and if that enables you to move Sanchez to the bullpen, which long term isn't obviously where you want him, but if you believe for the next 5 months that is the best thing for the Toronto Blue Jays and you can do that, I just kind of think you have to do it.
I think Hutchison deserves a chance, though, right? I mean, he was a good soldier. Like, let's not forget, he was the opening day starter in 2015.
That's right.
And I think
was stellar at home that whole year, I believe.
I don't remember to tell you the truth, but I remember him as being poor overall. But I do think that he's pitched fairly well in the minors. I think, you know, he's been at 3.3 ERA and a 1.11 WHIP. I mean, he's proving himself down there to a certain extent, and I think he earns that shot. I just think you got to get him up showing what he can do sooner rather than later so that you know what you have, because you're right, Ryan. This is a all-in season. You don't know who's coming back next year. And in my mind, if you have to go out and spend some of that prospect capital, I mean, do it.
It's tough not to at this point.
Yeah, and what's a World Series worth? How long do you dine out on a World Series, right?
That's a whole philosophical question unto itself. But I would say in this town, like, I mean, they're worth different things to different teams in different cities, and it would be worth an absolute, you know, load right now. I mean, you're dining out for, I'd say, a solid 5 years.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like you would take a World Series win this fall.
And 10 and more 81s and 81s.
Yeah, wouldn't you? Yeah. I mean, I think I would. I mean, it's nice to have a perennial contender and be in, you know, playing meaningful baseball in September, which this city hasn't seen at all except for last season. But I for sure would take a championship and then start rebuilding and
Absolutely.
See what you can do.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with this team. It's in such a weird spot because you still have guys like Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson, guys that are right in their prime, if not just a little bit off of it. But then you have young guys like Aaron Sanchez, Roberto Osuna, Marcus Stroman, and I think that's sort of the battle that, you know, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are kind of having right now. Like, you know, we're getting a little bit older. We have all these young guys, but, you know, we want to get younger, but, you know, we kind of have our window here. I mean, it's a really tough spot.
It is good to know, though, that you do have those young arms. So if you do go for it this year and enter into teardown mode, at least you're not starting from ground zero.
Yeah,
you're saying, well, you know what, if we had one more pitcher and we can, you know, maybe it takes a couple years, but we can add one good bat via free agency and develop a couple of our own. Well, actually, we're bouncing back fairly quickly. You know, there are some foundational pieces, you know, looking ahead for 5, 6, 7 years.
And I think you have to go into this season with the outlook that the heart of your batting order will not be back.
Yeah.
So if this isn't the year, then when is it? Then you're looking 4 or 5 years down the road again once new younger players have developed into their prime. And I mean, you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, prospects are prospects. Who knows if Dalton Pompey will ever be a decent Major League Baseball player? Who knows if Anthony Alford will ever become a pro? Who knows if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to pan out? He's 17 years old or whatever. I mean, you can't wait on those guys and be banking on that future when you have what you have right now. So in my mind, as I said, you go all in, and if you have to spend more capital and to go out and get a pitcher who you think is better than Drew Hutchison or maybe better than R.A. Dickey, go do it.
And it's very well possible. I just think from what we've heard so far from Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, that doesn't seem like the way they're leaning.
Agreed.
It does seem like, you know, we've seen it so far with the Jason Grilley trade. It was really, they didn't give up much, and they got Atlanta to take some salary. I think we might see something like that. Maybe if, you know, they're looking for an upgrade in the rotation, maybe they get an older guy, but they get a team that, you know, can take some of the money back, and maybe they don't give up as much, but it's a team that's looking to move on and they're looking to rebuild, and they take some on the salary. They give you a guy that's possibly an upgrade over Drew Hutchison. So, yeah, it remains to be seen what's going to happen there. Obviously, some tough decisions for the GM and the president of the team moving ahead. But you mentioned Michael Saunders off the top, and you know, we saw last night a career night for him, 3 home runs in Baltimore. And we go back to the beginning of the season when the Jay Bruce trade first came about. And, you know, most people I would say on Twitter that know a little bit about baseball weren't too into it. I mean, Jay Bruce is a guy over the years has been a big power hitter, not much for average. He's, you know, struggled with injuries at times and obviously not coming off a fantastic season last year. But man, did the Blue Jays really dodge a bullet there? They've just gotten incredible production out of Michael Saunders. You look at some of his numbers. I mean, he is right now, statistically anyways, better than Bryce Harper. Better than Mike Trout as far as like OPS goes. I mean, you couldn't have asked for more than what you've gotten from Michael Saunders so far this year. I mean, it really is incredible what this guy's done, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you said, it came within a whisker of trading him, and even going back to when they did trade for him last year. I mean, I know Arden Zwelling had a big piece on Sportsnet.ca today in the aftermath of Saunders killing it in Baltimore. But I mean, don't forget this guy's known nothing but hardship and trade rumors since he came to Toronto, playing all of, I think, 9 games last year after stepping on a stupid sprinkler head. So yeah, I mean, you can certainly make the case that he has paid his Toronto dues and deserves the good things that have come toward him, because, you know, you knew he was a guy who could play a little when they got him. I mean, he wasn't going to, you know, no one expected and no one expects him to maintain the pace he's at now. But, you know, he's a pro. He was a guy who had some pop and could hit for a decent average and play a pretty good outfield. So,
And he's a good Canadian boy,
yeah,
which
sure.
Never hurts, right? Yeah. It never hurts.
Now, when you look at Saunders, like I mentioned, a 999 OPS right now, he is set to be a free agent at the end of this season. So I guess the question is, we know Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, there's got to be decisions made on those guys. There's a good chance, like you mentioned, John, that neither of those guys are back next season. Michael Saunders, 29 years old, having a career season. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Blue Jays fans out there thinking this morning, like, hey, this guy's got to come back. I mean, if you're going to lose a couple of guys, it's tough to pay a guy off a career season like Michael Saunders is having, but you know, if the guy can stay healthy and he can do this kind of stuff, you know, it's hard not to even, you know, think about it.
Sure. I mean, God love him, but I mean, I'm not even worried about Michael Saunders' future in Toronto. I mean, if you win the World Series this year and you can get him on a good contract, then sure. But I mean, he's not the guy I would be worrying about spending money on if it's going to mean I don't get somebody else. Plus, you know, sooner than later you want Dalton Pompey in the major leagues, and he's probably going to be your left fielder until Kevin Pillar slows down. I mean, I just don't know that it's a long-term fit. He was perfectly positioned as a fourth outfielder. Now he's definitely taken over the everyday role, and he's, like you say, great season so far. But I mean, you don't want to sign a guy with a history like his to too much money over too much term.
Yeah, I mean, that is really the difficult part with Michael Saunders. You mentioned the injury history, and I mean, yeah, I agree. Just paying a guy off a career season is really tough to do. Blue Jays will take on the Orioles today in Game 2 of their series coming up at 4 o'clock today, as it'll be the Blue Jays looking for yet another big crooked number on that scoreboard. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Rob Wong joined alongside by John Gregg and Ryan Dixon. And, you know, Ryan already mentioned some of the holes that he's looking to fill as far as the pitching goes and maybe the bullpen. What are you looking for, John, as far as we head into the second half of the season as we get closer to that?
I would like to see another catcher here. I mean, I just think, you know, I hate to beat up on Josh Tooley. It's not his fault. I mean, but having a knuckleballer on your staff is a real issue. You know, your number one guy in Russell Martin has, you know, he needs his days off. He's been coming around recently. It looks like the neck is better, and he's hitting like the Russell Martin that we would expect. But a catcher would be great. Somebody who, you know, could also play DH, like catcher DH type of guy who can take some at-bats away for some other guys when they need a rest. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Troy Tulowitzki? You know, Jose Bautista's on the 15-day DL. I mean, there are some older guys on this team who have had some injury problems in the past, and you can use some depth like that, right? And I don't know. It's just such a black hole after Russell Martin. And if he's, God forbid, he gets hurt, I mean, then you're, you know, then they've got you over a barrel because you need real help real fast.
Just picking up on that, looking at the long term, Tulowitzki's interesting, right? Because you just don't quite know what you have there offensively. And, like, I mean, there's I feel like not that long ago, you could have said to yourself, worst case situation, if Encarnacion and Bautista are both gone, if we still have a 3-4, if we still have Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki in the heart of our order, we feel pretty good. But I don't know if you can say that right now.
It's a pretty big sample size with Tulowitzki, and it's not looking good. It just seems like he's never been comfortable in Toronto.
Yeah.
And granted, the injury last year did not help, obviously, and you know that played a big role. I mean, he still had big hits, timely hits in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But in terms of overall numbers, they weren't great, and they weren't great this year. So I think you're right, Ryan. I don't know what we have.
Because if he looks like the guy you expected you were getting, it's not a doomsday situation even to have both those guys leave. I mean, it's not great, but it's you can wake up in the morning and feel okay. But that's that just is, you know, another wrinkle in the equation that I just don't think you can account for yet.
Well, the thing with Tulowitzki, I mean, before he got hurt, obviously he started hitting the ball a lot better, started to look like the Troy Tulowitzki of old. But, you know, he is a guy that is getting older. I mean, the Troy Tulowitzki that we knew in Colorado most likely isn't going to return just because of age and decline and the way he's trending right now. But, you know, I don't think any of us think was as bad as he was at the beginning of the season. I mean, he went through his struggles, but like you mentioned, I mean, there are more questions than there are answers right now with Troy Tulowitzki. And I'm sure the Blue Jays wish that they kind of had an idea of what they had here with Tulowitzki, and that would obviously help moving into the offseason with some of the decisions that they have there. So we'll see what happens with this Blue Jays club. Troy Tulowitzki most likely returning next week, according to Blue Jays manager John Gibbons, and of course Jose Bautista on that 15-day DL. But they will take on the Orioles this afternoon at 4:05 first pitch here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. R.A. Dickey taking on Yovani Gallardo comes off the DL for the Baltimore Orioles. When we continue here on Sportsnet Magazine Live, we will shift focus to the NBA Finals. The Cavaliers forcing a Game 7, which goes tomorrow night in Golden State. Some legacies on the line. The Golden State Warriors and their incredible dream season and LeBron James. We'll discuss all those things when we return next year on Sportsnet Magazine Live here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of At the Letters, our Blue Jays podcast.
A man with a beer named after him in Pennsylvania, Uncle Ray Searage's Bucko Blonde Ale. It's Ray Searage. How are you, Ray?
All right. How you guys doing?
It's a life goal to have a beer named after myself someday. I'll tell you that. You probably don't have to pay for one of those whenever you have one, eh?
This is not in my wildest dreams having this done.
So we obviously wanted to have you on to talk about Jay Happ, who just signed with the Blue Jays. He had such a great finish to a season last year with you guys. And a lot of that success is attributed to the work that you did with him when it came to, you know, tweaking his mechanics and his approach. Can you just kind of detail what you saw from Jay when he first arrived in Pittsburgh and, you know, what some of the adjustments were that you wanted to make?
You know, they were basic and simple. I think he got away from himself a little bit. It wasn't something that came out of the blue. This guy is very talented, and I think he's going to do well with the Blue Jays, especially with Russell Martin, because Russell will be able to get a good feel for him.
The pitch. Strike 3 call. Strikeout number 10 for Jay Happ tonight. He has retired 8 straight, 5 of them by strikeout.
Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on At the Letters and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Did it happen in one day?
Nope.
Came a long way?
Yeah.
Never know what kind of angle?
Nope.
Crossover, break your ankle?
Yeah.
Slap you with the rock?
Nope.
Steph Curry.
Welcome back to
shot.
Sportsnet Magazine Live here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Rob Wong joined alongside by Ryan Dixon and John Gregg. The NBA Finals conclude tomorrow night in Golden State at Oracle Arena. The Golden State Warriors trying to finish off the Cleveland Cavaliers at home in game number 7, or maybe it's the Cavs trying to finish off the Warriors in game 7. Either way, the NBA season will come to an end tomorrow night. Gentlemen, I don't know about you, but you know, I've been very careful this postseason to not let a single game sway me, whether it was the Raptors postseason run or just any playoff game in general. I said, you know what? Every game is different. I'm going to treat it like that. I'm not going to let things sway me one way or the other. But after the first two games of the NBA Finals, I tweeted out, I think this is over in four or five. Like, it just looked awful for Cleveland. They had nothing going right. They couldn't stop anybody. They couldn't score. LeBron James was struggling. And here we are headed to a game seven, John. I mean, the turnaround even from just the last two games, even when Golden State went up 3-1, I think everybody thought, okay, it's over. They're going to win one of these next two games. But back-to-back blowout games by the Cavs, LeBron James looks like the greatest player in the history of basketball. And, I mean, I don't believe in momentum on a game-to-game basis. I'm more of an in-game momentum guy. But if you believe in that stuff, I mean, it's the ball is in Cleveland's court, and it looks like they are headed towards a potential title here.
Yeah,
for me, I mean, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're at a coin flip situation right now, but I mean, you never bet against LeBron James. He can do so many things so well, and if his jumper is working like it is right now, he's impossible to defend. You know, if he can knock down that, you know, the occasional three pointer and, you know, the 20-footer or 18-footer, and if you give him any space at all, he's just going to go straight to the hoop, and you know you're not going to stop a linebacker as he goes straight to the hoop. And you know, he's looked like you say, Rob, one of the best players in the history of the game. And he's, you know, this is not the LeBron James that the Toronto Raptors saw. That's for sure. He was deferring in that Eastern Conference final. And, you know, he has decided that if we're going to win these games now, I'm not going to defer. Now, granted, Kyrie Irving is, you know, doing his thing, shaking and baking and jacking up shots and hitting, you know, better than 50% most of the time. So he's helping out a lot, too. But there's no doubt that this has been LeBron James's series, especially the past couple of games.
And I guess that's the thing, Ryan. He's getting help this year. I mean, we remember last NBA Finals where Kevin Love was hurt, Kyrie Irving got hurt in the first game, and LeBron James had to carry the team. And by game six, I mean, he was just out of gas. Like, there wasn't much more he could do. But this year, he's got J.R. Smith hitting threes. He's got Richard Jefferson giving him good minutes. He's got Kyrie Irving, obviously, and a Kevin Love that's sort of been limited. But, I mean, he's getting more help this year. But despite the fact that he scored 41 the last two games, I mean, he's doing it a lot on his own as well. But it just seems like everything around him is a lot better.
Yeah, the perfect formula for Cleveland is having the 2015 LeBron mindset with the 2016 Cleveland team, right? You have him being out there being the lead horse, but before it was out of necessity, whereas now it's like, well, I'm going to play this role, but when I do dish off, I've got these guys who are really stepping up. And yeah, people kind of forget that Cleveland wasn't a whisker, but was actually threatening to take control of the series last year without anyone beyond LeBron.
Yeah, they were up 2-1.
Yeah, so that's why I think It was so shocking to see them go down. I mean, I just think everyone expected a fight from the beginning. And yeah, for a while, it looked like we weren't going to get it, but here we are. I mean, I will say the thing about the 3-1 lead is to make it just disappear, what you really have to do is win one on the road. Because as soon as you win game five on the road, you really should be able to win game six in your own building. So, I mean, obviously the real test is still to come here in a game seven in a sport where home court really means a lot. I mean, the Cavs have done great to get it back to this point, but they win game five when Golden State doesn't have Draymond Green. And then, you know, you have your back against the wall. If you can't win that game six at home, you probably shouldn't have got to the NBA final. So now we'll really see what they've got going.
So here's my question for you guys then. Let's say the storybook finish happens. LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers win the city's first championship in 52 years or whatever the number is. Does LeBron opt out, become a free agent, leave Cleveland? And if he does, is he vilified the way he was before, or is he a god now and can do whatever he wants? He brought a championship back to his home city, and now it's off to LA or New York or Chicago or wherever for fame and fortune.
Well, if you read Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports, his piece after game six kind of hinted at that. You know, he's been hearing that other NBA teams believe that LeBron James eventually is going to be in play again via free agency, whether it's this year or next year or down the road. But I mean, that's what I always thought. LeBron would come home, he would win a title, and then he would get to do whatever he wanted. If he wanted to leave, he could leave. If he wanted to stay, he could stay. But I mean, I think that's the ultimate goal, right? It's bringing that title home to Cleveland, back to Ohio where he was born. I mean, that's the whole reason why he wanted to return.
Yeah, I think he certainly can leave at that point with much less severe repercussions than he did the first time, obviously. I mean, is there still blowback? I think probably based on how much of a big deal he made about coming home. But I think the old letter itself maybe said something about, you know, there wasn't anything that said, I'm coming home to live out my remaining years. It said, I'm coming home to try and win a championship. And there are still these unique draws out there because, you know, the Lakers have essentially never been this bad this many years in a row, like ever since they moved to LA anyways, I think. And because of the NBA landscape where we know there's going to be some really crazy free agent classes coming up, and, you know, you throw a team like LA out there, which more than any other team in North American sports can go from the dregs to the penthouse based on, I think it would still be the number one signature franchise, you know, prime destination in amongst NBA teams for free agents. And then they play in a league where if you do go out and get the best free agent and the third best free agent, all of a sudden your team can rocket to the top. I mean, the Yankees can sign Bryce Harper, but that doesn't mean they're going to go to the World Series. At least can sign Steven Stamkos. It doesn't mean they're going to the Stanley Cup final. If the LA Lakers bring in Chris Paul and LeBron James and add it to whatever they've built in the next, you know, let's say that happens in 2017. Yeah. You know, so it is just interesting because there will be these other, and throw the Knicks in the mix too, right? Like, there's another signature franchise. I mean, the Knicks are essentially the Leafs of the NBA. Like, they haven't won since about the same time. You know, they were even kind of good around the same time in the mid-90s and never won. And whereas the Leafs are now on the path to healing, the Knicks are still kind of lost in the woods, but they do have Porzingis. And, you know, I mean, remember when LeBron left the first time, I think the money seemed to be that he was going to go play in Madison Square Garden. So it's not just that, oh, well, there could be other offers out there. It's that, ooh, there's these kind of intriguing scenarios out there.
And I wondered how, sorry, Rob, I wonder, you know, everybody talks about things like endorsement money and, you know, playing for the Lakers or the Knicks or the Bulls, say, is, you know, where the money's at off the court, right? I mean, I don't know, though, that it's the same for a guy like LeBron, right? I mean, he's making his money no matter what.
And he's the one guy, too, who could actually attract guys to Cleveland, right? Like, it's not like you have for him to get together and have LeBron and friends team. That could happen with the Cavs.
Sure.
Not just trying to make everyone in Ohio feel better. I feel like that could actually happen.
I think LeBron and friends happens wherever LeBron wants it to happen. Unless it's a matter of, you know, with Miami, it was, well, Dwayne Wade is there, so I'm going to go to him because, I mean, first of all, it's South Beach. Second of all, there's no taxes on athletes. And third of all, you know, we're going to go to Wade because he's not leaving that team. But you're right, Ryan. I mean, he draws players in, or he can decide where he wants to go, because any team in the league would shed whatever they had to shed from their roster to get LeBron James on the team, right?
And that, it's crazy that, you know, on the eve of a Game 7 where Steph Curry can win his second championship in a row, he is a unanimous MVP. But every GM in the league, you know, if you said you got one guy to build a team around for next year, everyone's still taking LeBron James, right?
Sure.
Like, LeBron and a bunch of dudes gets you further than anyone else and a bunch of dudes.
Well, the thing, I mean, LeBron James, 31 years old, so he's still relatively young, but he's running out of time. And
he's,
I mean,
old in basketball.
He's
years,
old
though,
in
right?
basketball
he's,
years.
He's
exactly.
played a lot of basketball since he turned.
Well, yeah,
18,
you go
right?
to the finals every year. The miles rack up quick.
That is Ryan Dixon. I'm Rob Wong, joined alongside by John Grigg here on Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's look at things from the Warriors' perspective for a second. 73 wins, statistically the greatest season in NBA history. No other team has reached that mark. If they lose tomorrow night, Ryan, does this tarnish the season at all?
It's funny because when they came back on Oklahoma City, I thought, okay, you know what? If you lose in the final, no shame. Like, no, yeah, okay, there's going to be an asterisk, of course. Like, oh, they didn't, you know, went on to lose in NBA finals. But I thought the way they came back there against, you know, don't forget, these other teams, if it wasn't for the Warriors, like, OKC is a championship-level team. San Antonio is obviously a championship-level team. Like, there's such other great teams in the league. I thought basically it kind of didn't matter at that point, and they would be, you know, sort of roundly lauded, and you could still kind of revel in this crazy year. But now that if they lose, they would have gagged up a 3-1 lead. Now I think you go, yeah, you know what? I think we, you know, need a serious footnote at the bottom of this entry.
Yeah, and I think, too, my memory might have faded and it might be a little bit more romantic than it actually was, but it's how the Golden State Warriors are losing compared to how the Chicago Bulls 20 years ago were losing. It's getting, you know, it's being blown out by numbers that Chicago never saw, really. And it's, you know, Steph Curry losing his mind and whipping mouth guards. And it's, you know, cracks in the supporting cast, Harrison Barnes looking like he's afraid to shoot. And, you know, it just, those aren't the things I remember of those Chicago Bulls. I mean, first of all, if we're talking greatest team of all time, you don't have Michael Jordan on your team, right? So you're not the greatest team of all time. But they played lockdown D like nobody's business.
Yeah.
They lost, I think, 3 playoff games that year. I think one of them might have been approaching 20 points, but otherwise one of them was an OT and the other one was relatively close. So, I mean, we weren't seeing the meltdowns and kind of a little bit of like the, oh, well, this game's over, we're giving up on it, you know? And instead it would have been more like bear down, get ready, you know, show them that we can, what they're going to be up for next game. And I'm not seeing that from the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah. The weird thing with the Warriors, I mean, there's been times this year where, and I think it was, you know, some of the games that they're playing against San Antonio and even Oklahoma City this season, and Steph Curry's hitting these shots from just, you know, 30, 35 feet away. And I'm thinking, if he's hitting these shots, I mean, who is beating this team? But when he's not hitting these shots,
that's it.
I mean, then we have problems. I mean, you look at the way the Warriors have played the last two games, and obviously injuries have been a big part of it. Andrew Bogut's out for the rest of the season. Harrison Barnes can't hit an open shot to save his life. Andre Iguodala can't run down the floor. I mean, his back is killing him. I mean, they have some issues right now heading into Game 7 for sure. When you look at LeBron's legacy, and we kind of touched on it a little bit as to what he may do in the future, but if he loses tomorrow, whatever happens tomorrow, Ryan, what do you think his legacy is? Has it even enhanced a little bit with the way he's played?
It's just tough. Like, he's kind of got this weird Peyton Manning thing going on, right? Where Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl, but then, you know, he just kept being on good teams and not having more. And even though LeBron has two, it's like, well, you go to the final 7 years in a row. Like, I do think it's tough to overlook the fact that even though there's, you know, there's reasons for why it's happening, you just look at the inability to close. I don't think, I put it this way, even if he, I mean, to a real basketball nerd, can you make the argument that, you know, if LeBron goes out and scores 45 in Game 7, but they lose, like, yeah, but look how great he is? Sure, but to the casual fan, I think it becomes made the final and lost again.
I was just going to say, I mean, the best athletes in all the sports, I mean, they have their detractors. I mean, Sidney Crosby doesn't have his fans, and, you know, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper in baseball, Ronaldo in soccer, obviously, but it seems like there's a lot of LeBron haters out there.
Well, it's part of that is how he carries himself, sure, and is, you know, he has, there is a slightly odd element to LeBron with some of his, like, transparent yet kind of cryptic tweets. And, you know, like, I got to give it to Sportsnet Magazine's own Evan Rosser, where he was like, at least with Kobe, you would know, like, he'd just look you in the eye as a teammate and be like, buddy, you got to pick it up. Like, come on, dude. Whereas LeBron's kind of, you know, until we're a team tweet, we will never, like, I mean, obviously, who knows what he's like in the locker room, but you get the sense that there's a passive aggressive element to him as opposed to the, like, you know, Mark Messier, Kobe Bryant, grab teammate X by face, pull in toward your face and say, I have something to tell you.
Yeah. And I would say, as far as his legacy, Rob, it's, you know, he's dragged some teams through a fairly poor Eastern Conference into NBA Finals and as we've already discussed, being undermanned due to injuries and whatnot, you know, outside of the 1 year with Miami, you know, they won those titles the way NBA teams win titles these days, which is with, you know, two, possibly three superstars, yeah. three all-stars, right? I mean, when he was supposed to win, I would say he's two out of three.
He's 50%. That's right.
Right? You know, and otherwise, as we saw last year, he almost won that championship himself. And you know, this year, who knows what's going to happen Sunday. But I would say that he is, as Ryan said earlier, LeBron and a bunch of other dudes can get you pretty far. And I think, you know, three or four times already, he's shown that he can take you right to the gates. And then you run into the Western Conference, which is always going to be a tough out.
Quickly, who do you got? Game seven.
I'm going to take the Cavs.
Cavs, right?
Yeah, I'd go Golden State.
It's a coin flip, like you mentioned. I want to see Golden State win so bad, but I think the Cavs, just with the way the Warriors are banged up right now, I think the Cavs squeak it out. LeBron James has a great game.
I just like the storyline.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, for
I really
sure.
like that storyline.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game regardless. Still, just got a couple of minutes left here, John, but we want to talk about the Russian doping scandal, obviously, that has rocked the sporting world. The IAAF upholding a ban, barring all Russian track and field athletes from competing at the Rio Olympics. And we'll get a final decision from the IOC next week. But it really does seem like, you know, in that country and the way it's expanding right now and the news leaks that have come out, it's just not track and field. It's other sports, other athletes coming out of that country.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody knows that the Russians use athletics as a huge propaganda tool. And I mean, everybody does, you know, everybody revels in their victories and lionizes their sports heroes. But yeah, the systemic nature of what seems to be going on there is obviously really disconcerting. I mean, we've seen the under-18 hockey team pull out of, I believe it was the Ivan Holinka due to doping, and obviously Maria Sharapova. I mean, there's a long history of using that drug in that country. I'm for one, I'm not sure that the IOC won't just overturn this. You know, let's not forget the Olympics were in Russia 2 years ago. I mean, it's not like they're not friendly with each other. So it'll be interesting to see. And then I'll be interested to see what happens with neutral athletes and who exactly is proven to be clean and can get through and still compete in Rio. Because it is a shame for the athletes who are clean
sure.
and have not failed any doping tests. As we all know, I mean, amateur athletes, you know, they don't live the high life by any means. And they spend their lives, you know, trying to make money and training for competitions like the Olympics. So, you know, hopefully for them, we can see them get through. But I don't know. I'm still very skeptical as to what the eventual end will be with this.
Yeah, we'll find out on Tuesday what the decision will be from the IOC, the Rio Olympics, coming up in the beginning, first week of August. Coming up next here on Sportsnet Magazine Live, we will shift focus to the NHL draft, which goes next week. The Maple Leafs, obviously, with the number one overall pick. They got to pick Auston Matthews, right? I think that's where we're all leaning. We'll talk about that next when Sportsnet Magazine Live continues. I'm Rob Wong, joined alongside by John Gregg and Ryan Dixon here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Rob Wong joined alongside by John Gregg and Ryan Dixon. It is a beautiful day here outside the studios anyways in the city of Toronto. We hear it's warm out there, but we're about to talk hockey, and that is because the NHL draft is less than a week away. First round goes Friday nights, and of course you can watch it on Sportsnet. The Maple Leafs have the first overall pick, first time since 1985. And we all know who they took back then. That would be Wendell Clark, who has become quite the legend in this city. But yes, we are once again in a situation where the Maple Leafs have the number one overall pick. They've got 12 picks in the draft, gentlemen, seven of the first 100. So lots of options out there. I think it's pretty obvious at this point who is going to go number one unless something crazy happens, but Austin Matthews looks to be the newest member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I guess the question is, what do they do with all the other ones, John?
I got a question for you
first.
Yeah,
go for it.
If Austin Matthews turns out to be as good as Wendell Clark, but no better,
right.
Is he a bust? Is he a disappointment
yeah,
in this?
Yeah, he is. I think so. I mean, it's so hard with Clark because obviously so much of it was like the injury problems that
sure.
he had. But if Austin, I mean, of course there's an inflated sense of what Wendell Clark was in Toronto, but he was a great player. I mean,
I think he hit 70 points once, right?
Yeah, I think
40
he had,
goals once during a high
over,
scoring era.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it was the fights and the hits and all that stuff
sure.
that
But if yes, if Austin Matthews' impact on the ice is the same as Wendell Clark's, yes, you're disappointed because you are looking. I think just to keep playing this game, if Austin Matthews is as good as Matt Sundin, would you be like, I'll take it? Or.
Well, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think
you have to take 500 goals and Hall of Fame. But I know what you're saying because what you want is 110 points a year, right?
He wasn't. You know, Matt Sundin was never the best center, the all-around beast of his era.
Yep.
And I mean, I guess the thing with Matthews is, you know, I don't think we yet know exactly what his high-end points projection is going to be. It's more about that he is seen as a do-it-all.
He's Kopitar.
Yeah, Kopitar, Taves. And I feel like those guys, because of the championships they have a there's a more of a sheen on them than there is to Matt's, who it's probably the opposite of Wendell Clark. Whereas Clark's image is somewhat pumped up. I mean, obviously people understand what a great player Matt Sundin was, but you kind of forget, like, he didn't get hurt, you know, day in, day out. He was just a 6'4" point per game player who really brought it, but he would never have been mentioned. Same breath as like Forsberg, Mario, and then guys who didn't, or even like Joe Sakic, Sergei Fedorov.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the sense is they're drafting first overall, and in 3 years, you know, they want the hope is this guy. I mean, okay, Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid are probably still going to be ahead of him, but maybe that's it in the minds of some, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the hype's been, you know, sufficient with Austin Matthews, obviously. I mean,
deserve it.
And people have talked, you know, that maybe last year, if he was, 3 days he missed last year's draft by when he was born, that, you know, he would have been in discussion for that second overall pick behind Connor McDavid. So, I mean, there's a lot of hype surrounding this guy. But I think, John, you know, maybe the fact that we haven't been following this guy, I think most people haven't been following this guy since he was 16, not like the Sidney Crosbys, the Connor McDavids of the world, that, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that really don't know that much about him, and maybe the expectations aren't as high with those people.
I mean, for sure you haven't been, you know, the body of work is there if you just look at his HockeyDB page,
sure.
But it's not there in terms of anybody having seen him. I mean, when you play out of Arizona and then you skip the CHL and then you end up in Switzerland, I mean, all you see are highlight packs, right? And the highlight packs look pretty damn good, but you're right. You haven't seen him on a day in, day out basis. It's harder to scout. How do you compare him to other kids in his age bracket? I mean, so there is a difference there. We saw Connor McDavid. We saw it on an almost weekly basis, whether it was on Sportsnet or otherwise, you know, what he could do, and we haven't seen that from Austin Matthews. We've just seen that he can lead a men's league in goal scoring and lead a world championship team in points. So by all accounts, he's going to be really good, but you're right in that we just haven't seen quite how good he possibly can be yet. Ryan's seen him. You've seen him up close.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. The first thing is, he is one of those guys who is bigger than he is. Like, you read the stat line and you see the numbers and you're like, okay, he's 6 foot whatever. But then when you see him, you're like, that guy's big. Like, he fills out his jersey. He's not like, you know, Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel, who are still like kind of skinny kids. Like, he's a thick dude. And yeah, having watched him for you know, pretty much a week at the World Championship, you know, there's such a this fun dynamic going on with Patrick Laine because they're such different players. And, you know, there's Laine, like, he was the MVP of the tournament. And he has a game that's so easy to appreciate the way Alex Ovechkin's is. But with Matthews, you know, you kept hearing, like, it's all the work away from the puck. I wrote a feature on him, too. So I had talked to all these coaches. They're like, you know, doing all the little things. And then in a quarterfinal game against the Czech Republic, the Czechs had finished first in the division. The U.S. was fourth. So the Czechs were pretty heavily favored. And Matthews scored the only U.S. goal in regulation time. And it was just a beautiful little move to his backhand. Went in, like, took a pass in full flight, went in alone, and did the cheeky, you know, if it gets stopped, you're like, what were you doing? But when it works, it's brilliant. And then scored the only shootout goal of either on either side. And he kind of played off that first move, then sucked it back when it looked like he was going to go to his backhand. And you were like, oh, there's the ability too. Like, there's the pure athlete. That's not just, oh, he works so hard and he's big and strong. It's like, don't forget, there's some magic hands in there too. Like, he was a great athlete all around.
The thing that intrigued me the most about that feature was the idea that, you know, Patrick Laine, and God love him too, you know, he thinks he's the man. And so far, you know, every level he's been the man, right? But whereas Austin Matthews went to the World Championships and came into the room like an 18-year-old kid, you would expect him to come into a room full of NHLers and older guys, right? Where he didn't think he was the man and wasn't going to try to assert himself on the ice like he was the man until he figured out he's actually the man.
Yeah.
Right. And it was, you know, however many games into the tournament where he just, you know, walked into the dressing room one day and they could tell that there was something different.
Yeah.
And then that translated to the ice. I mean, that's Jonathan Toews, right? Like, that's Anze Kopitar. So, I mean, hopefully that's who he is.
No part of me thinks Austin Matthews lacks for confidence. He's just doing...
But he knows his place, right?
Yeah,
he's not cocky.
No.
He's just confident once he gains the confidence.
And, you know, I feel like any year you ever do a feature on the guy who's going to go number one, all his old coaches are going to say amazing things about him, and boy, he has such drive. But, like, Don Granato, Tony Granato's brother... used to coach at the U.S. National Team Development Program. Now they're both at Wisconsin. But he basically said to me, look, the short version of it is there's every kid I've coached, including Jack Eichel. He didn't coach Eichel for as long, but he had a quarter season with him. There's every kid I've coached, and then there's this guy. Like,
wow.
It is not the same thing. And he was saying, like, his drive is just – other level. And I think you always, like, us sitting out here in the general population are like, yeah, well, they're all like that. Not necessarily. Like, you can get to the NHL just being a kid who woke up and can do these things. It's not always, you know, that, I mean, more and more it is, because the bottom line, the minimum standard to get there is so high based on how hard kids work out. But yeah, not every one of these high-level athletes has that all-encompassing, maniacal, like, whatever I got to do and willing to do this and willing to do that. And Austin Matthews certainly sounds like your typical, you know, harassing guys on a team. Like, come on, stay out a little longer on the ice.
It's the Crosby effect, right?
Yeah, it's Crosby effect.
It's the willingness
effect.
To work, like, on something constantly.
Yeah.
To make yourself better all the time.
And it's funny, like, just thinking about it, Crosby has kind of, like, as much as he's, like, a continuation of this type of, you know, the great pantheon, he is actually probably patient zero for the new, like,
100%.
Yeah, you know, the as his teammates joke, like, the greatest third liner on planet Earth, right? Like, he is the first one of the new world order, where it's like, you can't just be Mario and be like, well, I'm just this good. You know, like, I mean, I have never lifted a weight. I have never whatever, like, you know, now, as in the world as a whole, like, you know, 35 years ago, if you had a university degree, you had a great job. Now it's like, well, that's the ante. And as the bar has gone up in the NHL, yeah, Crosby's the one. And I feel
like... the first 21st century hockey player.
Yeah,
right?
And, you know, you could go to Toews after that, and even, like, Stammer probably. And,
yep.
And yeah, and Austin Matthews very much seems to fit that mold that you have to fit now to be the number one pick.
Well, it seems like we're all pretty sold on Austin Matthews going first overall to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, the question is, what do they do with the other picks? And, you know, you look at the way their team is structured right now. It is getting a lot younger. It is a lot younger right now, but most of their top prospects are at the forward position. Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Nikita Soshnikov, Jeremy Bracco. I mean, the list goes on and on with these young, talented forwards they have. When you have this many picks, and I've always been you have to draft the best player available wherever you are, regardless of need. But when you have a lot of these picks, John, can you kind of maneuver your way into selecting for need at all?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what the Leafs do at the draft in terms of, do they continue the trend that they started last year of, you know, packaging picks to trade down or you know, and just accumulate more.
Right.
And I mean, they've got 12, so how many more do you need?
Sure.
Really, you know, in my mind, there's a couple. I mean, they need defensemen, but they really, I think, should be looking at a goalie. And, you know, I'm not suggesting, I mean, they've got the 30th pick, they've got the 31st pick, then they've got the 57th pick. I think in one of those, with whether it's 30 or 31, it really doesn't make a difference. I think you got to take a goalie. And because you got it in 3 or 4 years, when this team is hopefully trending towards a contender, you're going to need that guy. And that's how long it's going to take to develop a guy like that. And I know goalies are crapshoots, and I know that they're out there, you know, but I mean, you don't need a good one right now. And in fact, it might even hurt your development to a certain extent, at least if you're shooting for the bottom third of the standings, if you do have a good one. So yeah, I'd be skewing towards looking at the goalies. I wouldn't necessarily want to be the first team to take one, but if a run on goalies looks like it's about to happen, I would jump in there. And then I'd be looking at defensemen and trying to bolster that, because you're right, Rob, they've got a bunch of forwards and they're not all going to make it. They're not all going to be great. You know, you're hoping, you know, 3 or 4 of them really are future full-time NHLers. I mean, you know, 3 or 4 of them, and that includes, you know, Nylander or Marner, those guys, I'm not including them in the list, right? The rest of them, you're hoping the Hymans, the Soshnikovs, the Freddie Gauthiers, those guys, you're hoping that they become full-time NHLers. But so, yes, I would look to, I wouldn't skip over obvious advantages in skill, but I would start looking to drafting by position.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a jump ball, yes, I think you have to skew toward defensemen, because it does look like they have a pretty good stock of forwards. Obviously, if you're looking at it and it's like, well, we think this, you know, center or winger is 10% better than this other kid, then take them, because they're still at the point in their process where it's about accumulation. It's still about, to some degree, casting the net as wide as possible. But yeah, when you have 12 picks, you can probably, and I'm sure they probably have an ideal in their head, and where, you know, they thought, let's get 73 forwards and 2 goalies or whatever. But I mean, you've got so many picks that there's so much flexibility, and this management team has shown such creativity, whether it is, you know, accumulating more picks, bringing in these guys on 1-year deals they can move out, or moving out salary. Like, they've got some creative minds at work here. So who knows exactly? I mean, I wouldn't even be completely shocked to see them do something that is an acquisition for an NHL player who they think can help them when they're going to be good. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? Maybe they would go out and be like, well, 23-year-old guy X is available now because he can't come to terms on an RFA deal, and we can give this team 3 draft picks and he's going to be with us for 10 years. You know, who knows?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point you made before, just that they are still in the rebuilding phase. I mean, a lot of people look at Austin Matthews now and a potential free agent that may be signing with the team that we'll talk about in a second, and maybe that accelerates the process. But, you know, if they come out of this draft with no defensemen, no goalies, and they're just taking the best player available, I mean, that's just the way it is, because they're still trying to accumulate assets and they're still trying to, you know, build up their team, and maybe they can move guys to get NHL-ready players or of the like.
Like, they're not a playoff team by any
exactly.
means. You know, not this season, likely not the next season. It's 3, 4, 5 years down the road that you're hoping to see the growth that turns them into a playoff team and then eventually a contender.
Yeah, but, I think
I don't even know that you'd want to be one. I mean, I guess you always want your young guys to learn what it's like to battle for that playoff spot and maybe squeak in and play some playoff games. But, you know, ideally, if you're I would think fans are hoping like for another high draft pick, wouldn't they?
But next year, probably still, yes. I think the hope for the Leafs is they'll cut out the middle phase. They'll be miss the playoffs, lose in the first round, make the conference final. That's their model, right? Like Pittsburgh with Crosby made the 07, so missed it in his rookie year, made the playoffs, and then made the final in the third year. Chicago, same kind of thing, right? Yeah. Just missed it. And then, boom, their first time into the playoffs, I think they made the conference final in 09. So I think, you know, the whole idea is you're going to get so many skilled players that when it comes together, you're going to blow right through, finish seventh to finish fourth. And maybe it takes you a couple times in the playoffs, but you've got enough talent to be like, well, when we've got this together, because we have a great coach, we should be good to go right away.
Well, I mentioned him before, not by name, but that he is a free agent pending. Steven Stamkos, obviously, July 1. Looks like he's going to be holding some sweepstakes. And obviously, the Maple Leafs have been linked to him forever and ever. But, you know, I guess the discussion is, with the way the team is right now, we've kind of talked about the fact that they are still in a rebuilding phase. Is this sort of the right guy at the wrong time, John?
I think
or
that...
Or is he the wrong guy at the wrong time just in general?
Listen, I think that anytime you get a chance to bid on a, you know, one of the best goal scorers in the world.
He had the title. Don't forget, like he had it before because Ovi had dipped a little and Stamkos was killing it before he broke his leg. He was the best goal scorer on earth.
And he's probably what, number two to four now? I mean, you might put Tarasenko in there or, you know, I don't know who else.
And could conceivably go back to one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, that, people forget he hasn't anybody to get him the puck since Marty St. Louis left Tampa Bay. But to get back to the original question, Rob, I would say that it's never a bad time to be able to bid on a talent like Stamkos, especially, you know, he's 27, right? He's not 32. I, for one, am not sure that you want to pay a guy $10, $11 million on your cap when you're not going to be good for the next few years anyway. So, and you're going to have to pay William Nylander in 2 years, Austin Matthews in 3 years, Mitch Marner in 3 years, and a bunch of these other guys. And if they pan out the way people are hoping, they're going to deserve some money. I think you go after Steven Stamkos, you try and sell him on your organization and on the team that you're building around him. But I don't think you open the bank to give him everything that he wants. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I have really kind of come back on this one, whereas I thought in November, December, I have to admit, I was one of those people who was connecting the dots pretty heavily. And then as time went on and just, you know, thinking about it, chatting with a few people, listening to what people had to say, I kind of came back a little bit. And the second the Leafs won the draft lottery, I thought, you know what, that kind of clinches it in my mind. Now you have Austin Matthews and William Nylander as your 1-2. And as much as you don't want to take anything to the bank, like not only do those guys look like, you know, you have a pretty good idea what they're going to do at the NHL level, they're complementary. One is Taves and one is Kane. So even within the fact that you have your 1-2 covered, it's like you've got this diversity of in terms of what they can bring. So I just think for the amount of money it would presumably take to get this guy who has had a couple health concerns, who essentially brings what you figure to already have enough of, when you look at what you have to throw at him to get him, not that they have to woo him, but you know, it's still going to take 9 or 10. If this was Drew Doughty, I would say get on his front lawn the second free agency opens. If this was any defenseman aged 18 to 26 who, well, I guess it couldn't be 18, but if this was any defenseman old enough to have just qualified to become an unrestricted free agent, I would say if I was the Leafs, I would jump on it, because even if you're not quite there in your development yet, like you're looking at a guy who you would be signing to a 7-year deal. So, and it would help you so much to add to that blue line. But you know, there's inherent risk in signing someone to a 7-year enormous contract, even when it's Steven Stamkos. And I just more and more find myself thinking, I just don't know if it's quite the right fit for the Leafs. Like, if he is, if in his mind, as some people have speculated, we have no idea, he is thinking, I just want to play for the Leafs. Like, that's my team. It's my town. I love what's going on there. If he comes to them and says, within reason, I will take a decent, palatable salary, and moreover, I'll play right wing. Even that sways it a bit for me. I mean, then I think you do have to look really hard at it. But if you're, I quite frankly am no longer convinced that the Leafs need him as a like number one guy. I think they kind of have that in place. It's just going to take a couple years.
And sorry, John, go ahead.
So we talk about accumulation of assets, right? And you know, icing a roster, putting a lineup together from a position of strength. I mean, in my mind, if you can get Steven Stamkos for Sidney Crosby money, then I think it's well worth it. Because if that gives you the flexibility to go out down the road and deal one of these kids because you've got, you know, a plethora of riches, whether it's down the middle or just up front in general, then I think it's worth it. But I don't think it's worth it to go out and sign him for $10 or $11 million a year. It's too much on your cap, especially when it's a flat cap. And, you know, if the Canadian dollar stays the same, or if Canadian teams don't make the playoffs and ratings are crappy, then it's not going to get any better very soon. And you're going to run into a problem where you can't afford to keep the kids that you want to keep, and you're pulling a Chicago Blackhawks every summer.
And I guess that's sort of the thing with me. You know, if you're going to do the rebuild, you're going to do it properly. But once you sign that contract, you know, you potentially could trade them. But it's a lot more difficult to go back on that than it is to move forward with a bunch of young guys. And you kind of have an idea of where all the salaries are going to go. But, man, it's got to be so tempting. I mean, it's one thing to say, no, you know, he probably doesn't fit. But, you know, Steven Stamkos calls up Brandon Shanahan and wants to sit down. I mean, if you're Brandon Shanahan, you know, two CBAs ago, this has never happened. There's never been a 27-year-old guy like this that has come out. I know you mentioned John Tavares maybe in a couple of years from now, but it may never happen for another long period of time where a guy like this comes out to be a free agent and, you know, you have a crack at him.
So. Yeah, and I think there's something to be said, too, for it would be really nice to have a guy like Stamkos to mentor these guys who are, you know, 8-9 years younger than him, right? And
absolutely,
to shelter them from having to be, like, wouldn't it be great if Austin Matthews didn't have to be the number one center right away?
Yeah.
You know, he might be playing like it by the end of the year, but he doesn't have to be that guy, and he's not under the pressure to produce like one because you've got a potential 50-goal scorer in that spot. I mean, how much stock do you put in something like that? I mean, to me, there's something to be said for that, for sure.
And also for a local boy to come here after he's been in the league for 7 years. It's, you know,
it never happens.
Yeah, it would have been really tough for a guy like Stamkos to come in if the Leafs had the number one overall pick that year, like 18. I mean, no matter how mature you are, tough to handle. But now, I mean, He's a tried and true vet. Like, I mean, he is not, as much as you can be completely unfazed by the hordes here, he's going to be, he would be someone who's now equipped to handle that. So it's a better fit for him in that sense too.
Well, Stamkos aside, I mean, we talked about Austin Matthews, and we'll see what other picks that the Maple Leafs make next week. But next year, I mean, even if they don't make the playoffs, it's going to be one of the most exciting seasons in Maple Leafs history. I think the fans are really excited to see what happens next year. I mean, even just this past season, there was that stretch that week where Nylander, Kapanen, Hyman, Soshnikov, they all made their debuts. They're scoring goals. They're skating up and down the ice, and Twitter is just exploding. The hope, I mean, the hope on Leafs Nation on Twitter was just incredible, John.
Yeah, I'll be your typical Toronto sports fan for a minute and say that it'll be an exciting start to the year for sure. People will be very interested to see what Austin Matthews can do, what probably Mitch Marner can do, what, you know, William Nylander can do after a summer of conditioning and whatever, like getting stronger, I mean. But, you know, if those guys are on pace for 45 to 60 points and this team is, you know, sitting in the bottom 10 of the standings, it's not going to be that exciting for very long, and it'll quickly revert back to what it was this past season, which was lose as many games as humanly possible and race to the bottom. So, yes, it'll be an exciting start. Hopefully it'll be an exciting middle and finish with a lot of development, but it could go sour pretty quickly, I think, too.
Yeah, I think that if you're a Leaf fan, your hope is that the two most exciting opening nights in the next, you know, decade will be this one, because it's your first look at all these players, and the night you hang a Stanley Cup banner, because the other ones, like, you know, even if the team's good, well, on opening night, you're like, okay, here we go. But I don't really care until the playoffs start. That's when we're going to find out if there's a payoff. But when you haven't seen any of these, or, well, you've seen some of them, but you haven't seen Auston Matthews, you haven't seen Marner, you haven't seen them all together with Nylander. I mean, that first night where you're watching the guys who are supposed to drive your team forward, not a bunch of placeholder dudes and talking about the process, but those guys, no matter how good they are or aren't right now, that's going to be a huge night. But yeah, no doubt. Let's talk when, I mean, Patrick Laine is going to play with Mark Scheifele. He's going to score almost 30 goals, and he's going to be the rookie of the year. And Auston Matthews is going to have 21, and that's happening for sure, you know?
Yeah, and I can't wait for Patrick Laine to get over here and be quoted every day. Like, I mean, he's just like a super exciting guy to watch on the ice, and obviously has a big personality and is not your typical 110%, you know, dump and chase Canadian hockey player who just wants to defer to, you know, whatever the status quo is. It's going to be an interesting kid to watch develop for sure. Winnipeg is just going to love him.
Oh yeah, the Line A sweaters are, you know, flying off the shelves as we speak, just before the NHL draft, which goes next Friday. Like I mentioned, the first round available obviously here on Sportsnet, and we'll have coverage here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet Radio Network. When we continue here on Sportsnet Magazine Live, we'll continue to talk hockey, but we'll switch focus to the NHL Awards, which will be handed out very soon in Las Vegas. And speaking of Las Vegas, an NHL team is headed to the desert, to Las Vegas. We'll chat about that, talk about expansion, and just what does it mean for the NHL as a whole. I'm Rob Wong, joined alongside by John Gregg, Ryan Dixon. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Dan Robson.
We'll remember Gordie Howe for his untouchable five decades in pro hockey. We'll remember him for his vicious elbows and polite humility, for his four Stanley Cups, for his physical longevity, for conquering the limits that we weren't able to. We remember Mr. Hockey for the thrills we were alive to see and for those sepia-toned tales passed down through the decades. We remember him for being the greatest player the game had known, and when that was done, for staying with us, never retreating from our adoration, for remaining Mr. Hockey until it was finally time to go. In a special commemorative edition, Sportsnet Magazine honors the life and legacy of the incomparable Gordie Howe.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine on newsstands now. And available on Texture by Next Issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire.
Got a whole lot of 11:40 money. Here on Sportsnet Magazine Live, Rob Wong, John Gregg, Ryan Dixon with you for one more segment as we continue our NHL talk. And we will get to Las Vegas in just a moment.
That tune, by the way, has never been played as often on The Fan as it has been in the past week or so.
Oh,
right?
Man, Sin City. It's what it's all about. It's going to be the greatest stop on the NHL away schedule for teams this year. But we will touch on the Black Knights, the Blackjacks, whatever they'll be called in just a few moments. But Let's talk about the NHL Awards, first of all, which will be in Las Vegas as well. June 22nd is when they will be handed out. Will Arnett hosting the award show once again. Of course, you can watch it on Sportsnet. But some great debates, I guess we can have about some of the awards this season. The Vezina, we'll talk about the Vezina, the Norris, the Calder, the Jack Adams, and the Hart. Let's start with the Jack Adams Award. It's really the one that, I mean, I think most casual fans and just fans in general don't really care that much about. I mean, it's the coach, and there's some obviously some great stories. But I know for me, I think it's Gerard Gallant is sort of the shoe-in for that one. The Florida Panthers had an amazing season, whether you thought they overachieved or not. Definitely exceeded expectations for sure. Ryan, who do you got?
I would go with Barry Trotz just because of the way the Capitals were so dominant in both areas on both sides of the puck. And I just have a feeling, you know, the way I'm making it a grander point here, but just the way that team plays now, one of these years they're going to break through. But I do think, even though he's, you know, now just part of this narrative where they can't get past the second round and this is 2 years in a row, they just play such a different brand of hockey. I remember I went down to Buffalo halfway through the year when they were there, and I was doing something on Nicholas Backstrom, but, you know, just talking to some of the players in there and talking to Trotz himself. I mean, you just get the sense that, you know, like Carl Alzner was like, look, we knew in our heart of hearts before the way we played was not going to get it done. And that's not the case anymore. Like, we really, really, really believe in the way we play the game now. And yeah, I think, I mean, they were so dominant. They couldn't help but slow down a little bit at the end of the year, but I mean, they were just such a like bulletproof team start to finish. So I take Barry.
All right. I'll go just to make this even, Steven. I'll take Lindy Ruff. I would say that any coach who can lead his team to a Western Conference title with that goaltending deserves a lot of credit for the systems that he's put in place to you know, shelter those guys.
To score more
goals than the other team. And I'll also say this, the Dallas Stars play a brand of hockey that is exciting to watch. And it's a high event game. It's up and down the ice. They give up a lot of goals while they also score a lot of goals. And I think that is the type of hockey that the NHL needs to embrace more and more. 2-1 games, there could be great 2-1 games, but I think in general, you know, 4-3 games are better for the game, better for the product. And I'd like to see more teams try and play like the Dallas Stars.
All right, so spread around the board with the three coaches. Let's talk about the Norris Trophy. It is Brent Burns, Drew Doughty, and Erik Karlsson. We'll start with you, John.
I think it's Erik Karlsson in a walk, because although I know that there are a lot of people who think that, you know, Drew Doughty, or who say they know that Drew Doughty had a better season overall, I think Karlsson has put up, you know, he had basically an historic season for defensemen in terms of production. And, you know, he's got his warts, as any player does. But when you put up those kinds of points, it should be yours.
Ryan?
Yeah, Karlsson. To some degree, maybe more than any other player, like, he is a singular force in the, or he's a singular talent, right? Like, there's just not, you can take the best forward and then, or the most unique forward, and the second most unique is closer to that guy than the second most unique defenseman is to Erik Karlsson. And I guess, again, even player in general, like, just the way he can materialize from nowhere, and
it's going to be awesome to see him play in the World Cup on a team like where he's got talent around him instead of with the Senators, where he's just so far and away better than anybody else on the ice. I think it'll be fun to watch him play.
You're saying Patrick Wierkosz isn't very good?
No, I mean, and nothing against the Senators. They do have some talent for sure, but it's, you know, when you're that good, you're just better than everybody, so much better than everybody on your club team that it's almost hard to appreciate. But when you see him out there with the world's best against the world's best, I think it might open a lot of people's eyes.
I'm going Erik Karlsson as well. Brent Burns really made it hard on me. I love Brent Burns. It was an incredible season, incredible playoffs. But I think Erik Karlsson is my guy for the Norris Trophy. Let's talk about the Calder Trophy. This one should be interesting as well as far as the discussion. Artemi Panarin, Shane Gostisbehere, and Connor McDavid. Ryan, who do you have here?
I had Gostisbehere just because of the, outrageous number of goals he scored that either pulled Philly even or put them ahead. I mean, you just look at the points per game as a defenseman. Granted, I mean, as an older guy, he wasn't coming into the league at 18 as Aaron Ekblad did when he won the Calder. But I just think he did such unique things for, or such big things for his team. And yeah, I mean, my whole thing with Connor McDavid, which admittedly I then walked away from my own logic, was to some degree you either have him first or he's not on your ballot, because it's just a case of, you know, did not qualify sort of thing because of the low number of games played. Is there any doubt that the best guy who was a rookie in the NHL this year was Connor McDavid? I don't think so. It's just whether you do or don't think the body of work was sufficient, not even just to learn that fact, but that, you know, just say you have to have X amount of games to qualify. So, I mean, we know that's not a rule, but I think it's either a, yeah, it's McDavid, or I have five other guys because I just didn't consider them. And then I, as I said, completely did an end around and I put him second.
McDavid for you too, John?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's McDavid in a walk because, you know, when you're fourth in the league in points per game, even if you've only played 46 games, I think, you know, and you've proven yourself to be maybe already the first or second most exciting guy on the ice. I think that you deserve it. And I mean, if we're going to talk, you know, how many games you have to play, I mean, Gostisbehere played like 65.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean,
I think north of 60 would be, you know, 2/3.
How convenient, Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with Gostisbehere, you know, like Ryan was mentioning, he did things that, I mean, just, he had a stretch for a couple of months there where he was just unreal. And, you know, right up there with some of the top defensemen already in the NHL, scoring goals at a ridiculous rate, a power play, like, just dominant on the man advantage. But, I mean, ultimately, Connor McDavid, it's so hard to not have him up there. I mean, I get it, the 45 games, but the points per 60, the points per game, like you mentioned, you extrapolate that over the whole season, He's a top five NHL player.
It's like a Curry LeBron. Like, yeah, you're the MVP, but we know you're the best player.
But it's best player, not most valuable rookie, right?
Sure.
It's best rookie. So that's why I would give it to McDavid. I mean, Gostisbehere, he, you know, his injection into the Flyers lineup changed that entire team. There's no doubt.
Sure.
And the same, you could argue with Panarin, added the depth to that Chicago Blackhawks team that they were sorely lacking, right? And gave Kane a running mate. But for me, neither of them are as good as Connor McDavid, even if he only played 45 games.
All right, Vezina Trophy now. Brayden Holtby, Ben Bishop, and Jonathan Quick. John, which way are you leaning here?
I would go with Ben Bishop. I just think he put up numbers that were a little bit better than Holtby's. And, you know, Jonathan Quick, to me, is like a mystery. I don't know why he's on this list, to tell you the truth. His underlying numbers are horrendous, and he, you know, he's very athletic, which allows him to make the big highlight reel saves that you see on Sportsnet 360 every morning or whatever, but that's because he's out of position. That's because he's not as good a goaltender as he looks to be when you're just seeing him make big glove saves or diving across the crease. So I don't even know why he's nominated, but I would go with Ben Bishop just because he had a weaker team and put up some great numbers. But that takes nothing against, or nothing away from Holtby, who's excellent in his own right.
Ryan?
I guess I can't take Quick.
well, you can if just, did
no,
you?
No, I would say, I'd probably say Ben Bishop too, same reasons that not, just not quite playing behind the same rock, I mean, great team, but not rock solid D or rock solid team D game as Holtby.
Yeah, I would agree with you guys. I think Ben Bishop is the guy. I mean, I know Brayden Holtby's got 48 wins, and it's hard to look at that and say, I'm going to go against the grain here. But just the whole body work with the team that he had, Ben Bishop, I think, would be my selection as well. Quickly, the Hart Trophy. We get down to the big one of the nights. And, of course, it's Sidney Crosby, Jamie Benn, and Patrick Kane. Ryan, who do you like here?
I like Patrick Kane. I mean, I just think he had – this is where we can go down a rabbit hole, but, you know, there is a semantics aspect to it, and – I just think he had such an outstanding season. And to some degree, this award does end up being rewarding the most outstanding season. And they should probably just change the name of it to most outstanding player. Because he plays on a team with Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith, you can make arguments about how far do they fall if he's not on there, and you know, what's the true value. But man, he is an offensive producer unlike any other, and you know what he can do with the puck, and you know how much he can keep people on their toes. Just the fact, you know, sort of, I know the Hawks sort of faltered a bit toward the end, but I think to some degree he might get punished for the fact that he like really shot out, but at the end of the day, we're talking about all these scoring woes in the league. He had 106 points. Like I'm happy to give it to Patrick Kane.
Yeah, I mean, wire to wire season, he had the best season. I will say that I think that when you look at when the coaching change happened in Pittsburgh and when Sidney Crosby's season turned around, that team's season turned around. Where as Crosby goes, so go the Pittsburgh Penguins all the way to a Stanley Cup championship. I know that, you know, the voting happens well before the playoffs and everything. But I would suggest it should be Kane, regardless of Crosby's performance. I will be interested to see if the voters have any sort of bias or hangover from last summer and this controversy surrounding Kane and don't give it to him for that reason.
Yeah, I got Patrick Kane as well, like Ryan mentioned. I mean, just the whole body of the season, just incredible, 106 points. All right, just got a couple of minutes left here, so we'll quickly touch on it. Unfortunately, not too much time, but Las Vegas is getting an NHL expansion team in a couple of seasons from now. Quickly, gentlemen, will it work? John Grigg.
I think it'll work. I think most important, is to get in there first and be the first team in. You know, Vegas has about 2 million people in its metro area. There's a lot of Northerners who have relocated there. There's a lot of money in that city. So I see no reason why it can't work as well as it works in Florida or Carolina or in some of the other, you know, smaller, weaker markets in the NHL.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think it can, and I think it's important to acknowledge the successes of the Southern franchises in a year when Austin Matthews is getting drafted. We spent a lot of time talking about it. I mean, he was a kid who got sucked in by hockey, and he was a great athlete in a number of sports, and he would have played another sport if there was no Coyotes in Arizona, or if they had moved. So, I mean, there's been ups and downs with the Southern markets, and there could be ups and downs with Las Vegas, but I think the NHL more than ever is really starting to believe it's seeing the payoff from having these teams in the league.
100%. I mean, if the footprint is very important to the league, whether from a TV standpoint or from a player development and grassroots hockey standpoint, and if the Vegas team can do something along the lines of what the Dallas Stars have done by building grassroots hockey in that market, then you know, the sky could be the limit.
Well, the visiting players are going to love it regardless of what happens with the team in Las Vegas. Thank you very much, gentlemen. John Grigg, you can follow him on Twitter at John_Grigg. You can follow Ryan at Dixon on Sports. You can follow myself, Rob Wong, at WongSN590. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.